Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Stephen Parker. Stephen, how you doing, my man?
Very well, thank you. How about you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I'm trying to think when we were first chatting. It was last year. I reckon it was about November, maybe a little bit before. I can't remember now, mate. It was a while ago, though.
It was, yeah, towards the tail end of last year.
Yeah, we've had a Thanksgiving break, we've had a Christmas break since then, so everything's just blurred into one.
Absolutely.
But cool, but thanks for coming on, my friend. I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro for the listeners that don't know you. Steve, started off back involved with HR a long time ago as a HR manager at Primera Blue Cross. You were there for around 3.5 years. You were then in a management position at Plant Electric Supply. Again at Sunbelt Rentals, and again at Grastics. You then progressed on up to a director of recruiting role, and that was at Davison Group. You were then in a marketing and sales position at Rack and Road Car Rack and Hitch Superstores, and then you were a technical recruiting manager at Codis. And you currently are the HR and recruiter at RSI Security. Welcome to the show anyway. How you doing?
Yeah. No, you did good. You did good.
Listens I've had on the show are when I've had other recruiters on. I do think that a lot of the technical guys and girls in the security community to hear two recruiters chat, but I've done you a bit of an intro, Steve, and I'll start where I always start, which is I can never do it as well as you. So who are you, mate, and what do you get up to, and what's a day in the life like right now?
Very well. For me, as you said, I do have an extremely diverse working history, and that's kind of along with just where career tracks are going currently, is it's not so much about the linear career path. It's about the journey and not so much the destination, and just all the different experiences that you can have along your way in terms of developing yourself professionally. So within leadership, that's where I learned a lot of the backside of operations and HR. Getting into sales early on, I had a lengthy sales career, and then moving into other things. And it was COVID that happened that propelled me into the recruiting world. Prior to that, you mentioned I was in some marketing roles with some national companies, and then when COVID happened, like shut down all the marketing stuff, all the in person, and so those jobs fizzled out. But one of my clients happened to own a boutique recruiting firm, and he knocked on my door one day and had a conversation with me about if I'd ever thought about being a recruiter. And being a hiring manager myself in the past, I had my own recruiters, and I always loved some of the stories that they would come back to me with. Some of them were gruesome. Some of them were funny. Some of them were just downright like awful. I would never want to personally have that experience. And those were my thoughts at the time. And so I always thought it was a really cool job. And I took him up on his offer, and it's launched me into this whole new portion of my career where I've dived deeper into HR and recruiting. And I've been able to build myself up appropriately to where now, yeah, I'm technically the HR assistant. And then I oversee the recruiting process for RSI. Currently, and yeah, living every day as it comes and taking it as it comes. It's nice to be working for one of the few companies left in the United States that's still a fully remote workforce, and we're hiring tons.
Yeah, cool. No, wicked, man. There's loads to unpack there, by the way. And I love that story, by the way, about you, a typical recruiter. Your friend rocks up and recruits you.
Yep. Yeah, got recruited by a recruiter.
Yeah, no, I like that. It's interesting though, Stephen, like you talked there about like that linear kind of career path gone, and people have got to, and I think it's true. I think we're experiencing change a lot quicker. If I go back to like my grandma's generation, it was like, keep your job forever. And you know, that job for life thing is just so far gone. It is unbelievable. And I think even more so, I read a stat somewhere that we're all going to have to learn new skills maybe 2 or 3 times in our life because the rate of change we're experiencing so fast. And I bet there's a lot of security people out there that can relate to that. Maybe they've had a job that perhaps isn't so prevalent anymore, or maybe they're back on the market and having to upskill or reskill or kind of change directions or pivot. When you went through that, was it quite scary? Was there a lot of anxiety involved? How did you handle those changes?
Had my own recruiters in the past, and then as a hiring manager, and that is some of what you're doing, is if you're looking for someone to fill a certain spot, you're always keeping your eyes open. And when I was a fleet manager, I was always on the eye for drivers and good drivers at that. So if I happened to overhear a conversation or I would run into a driver at a truck stop and travels, I'd hand him my business card and say, here, give me a call if things ever change on your end. But to bring it to current is, yeah, even with the introduction to a, there's a lot of change that's happening all around us and we can't stay stagnant for too long. So to round back around is like just pivoting in skills. For me, it was probably a little easier than some other people out there in the world that have had to do a similar pivot just because of my previous experiences. But it was probably one of the most eye-opening because working as an actual recruiter, you really get to see some of the ins and outs. And one of the things that I adopted early on in recruiting was this firm belief that recruiters are in an exceptionally rare position to be in because we're in a position where all of a sudden we get to help other people in and in vast amounts, and we're helping better their lives. So whether it's we're helping them find something with better pay or a better culture or a better position or a better company or a better with relocation, that's where I get all of my passion and my motivation to be a recruiter is just from that belief that's been deep rooted in me. And I carry that forward with me every day. And I think about that during every interaction is how can I help better this person's life? Even if it's, I can't help them with a role that I have, but maybe I can offer insights into their resume. Maybe I can help make their resume a little bit better so that they can land that next job. Or maybe I offer them some advice on interviewing and how to present themselves during an interview or how to answer certain questions. It's all about helping people in this position. Mm-hmm. So that has, helping people has always been something deep within my soul since I was little. I've always loved helping people. And then just being a recruiter, it's really allowed me to see that vision through full circle.
You're a good recruiter, Matt. I can tell by the way you speak, like you can just tell it's like that kind of attitude, like over a long-term period, it just pays dividends because not everyone's like that. And it really does, especially like if you stay in and around the same space for a long time, as I'm sure you, Stephen, it makes a big difference because people remember stuff like that. And like say, if you're doing something where there's no instant gain or short-term gain for you, and it does come back round, and the next time you deal with people, it's easier for them, easier for you. But yeah, it's cool. There's so much more to recruitment than people think as well, isn't there? So much more to it.
I hear just as many stories from candidates as I might tell like my HR colleagues about is some of the stories that I hear even from candidates out there. It blows my mind some of the experiences they've had, both negative and positive. And I try to learn from both and not provide a negative experience. And my current goal is just to provide an exceptional candidate experience to every candidate, every interaction.
Yeah, cool. I don't know if you find this. What I find crazy, like when I feedback to people and they're like, oh God, thank you. And I'm like, it's all right. We're going to give you feedback, mate. And they're like, no, but no one else does. I'm like, that's part of the job. People don't, do they? People don't.
My analogy for that when I talk to candidates is that I'm afraid of ghosts, so I don't ghost people. And it's amazing at how many people respond well to that statement is, oh my God, thank you. And I tell every single candidate that until you hear from me otherwise, you're still under consideration. But I also follow up with every candidate that's in my pipeline. Every Friday, I send out an email to every candidate that's still within my recruiting pipeline that I'm working with. Maybe I'm waiting on internal feedback from a hiring manager or something, but every Friday I send out emails to those candidates to let them know, hey, you're still under consideration. Sorry for not being able to get back to you sooner than now on which direction we're going to go, but you're still under consideration and we'll be back in touch as soon as we have more for you. So that's part of it too, is just providing that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really good, mate. I like that. And what I found as well is it's nicer for the candidates. It's just being a nice human being. The other thing that we found as an agency is when we do keep in touch with people and keep the lines of communication open, people hold in the process and accept more offers, and you get better. It's a better service, but you get better results. Like you're better as a business, the candidates are better, the client. It's actually, there just isn't any downsides to it. But yeah, it's staggering how when you just do the job in full, people are shocked.
Yeah. And one of the better parts of providing that great experience to them is referrals. All of a sudden, they're telling their friends, they're telling their coworkers, hey, there's this other company and a great recruiter or a great experience. And that's one thing that recruiters are responsible for too, is getting referrals and getting those leads for other candidates that might be in the job market for a new position. Mm.
I think as well, like I know you mentioned AI there about a few minutes ago, and I'm sure we'll talk about AI a bit more, but I've got a theory that in this world where just like, I'm sure your social media feed's the same as mine, it's they're just bombarded, like everyone's telling us they're great and they've got these adverts, and it's almost, for me, it's almost coming back to that, like that referral, that relationship, that do that. I almost think that it's AI in some respects is sending us down that path of, because it's just so hard to, like, job boards are just packed, people can just reply so easy. So I think these sort of skills you're talking about, I've got a theory that they're just going to become more and more valuable because everything out there is so noisy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, yeah, no, I'm really noticing it. We had a client, Stephen, he was talking about saying never use an agency and et cetera. Anyway, they'd basically done something like 30 interviews from resumes that all looked phenomenal, but they'd all been through ChatGPT, these resumes, so they all looked great. So now this particular person's talking about using a recruiter because they need someone to actually sit down and do the interview properly. So I was like, that's an example where AI is actually making us busier, not taking our jobs away. So it's like, okay, maybe it's all right.
And it does. It takes a lot to filter through some of the stuff that's out there and some of the capabilities of AI and some of the prompt generators that are available within the internet. But once, it's funny you bring that part up, because once you know the pattern of AI and how it speaks and how it produces those prompts, now all of a sudden when you look at the questions, so a pre-qualification question as part of an application, the answer that they provide, it's like, you know that this was AI generated answer. And although the bulk of it might be truth, I sit here and think, where would people like that be though without the help of AI? Would they be able to describe their experience as well as AI can? And if they wrote in their answer themselves, would I give it a second thought versus what the AI wrote? So I try to still see things from both sides, but you're right, is there's things that happen within recruiting that no AI can take that on. There's no way to automate certain things within recruiting. And you hear about these different platforms that are like, oh yeah, who needs a recruiter when we can just offer you our platform? It's still a lot to know and a lot to look out for and a lot that I feel does bolster our own positions within HR and recruiting, is that AI isn't foolproof and neither is automation. There's always going to have to be some sort of human touch to it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think I can envision this world where we can automate certain parts of, whether it's being a recruiter or a security engineer. But I think, for example, like this now that we're doing, like we need to do this. Like if we're having a call about taking a job brief, like me and you need to do that. I think when we're getting on calls to candidates, we need to do that. But I could envision a world where we just get out of bed and maybe shortlists are generated for us and we can just walk into our day and just do 8, 9, 10 back-to-back interviews and then just walk off and everything else is automated, which I think would be really cool. So I could imagine that maybe in years to come. But yeah, I don't think actually, what I always say is there just always comes a point where a human just wants to talk to a human, especially if it's a career change. You know, bar our families and our health, there's nothing more important than the career. So it's quite important. So I do think you want that personal touch, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, even working fully remote, I've gone to a previous company that was fully remote. I went to them and said, hey, I wouldn't mind getting into a WeWork space, a shared workspace. And they came back and said, we don't even have a real estate budget anymore after COVID. No. And it's like sometimes even I am dying for that personal touch of being able to just sit in front of someone face to face like it used to be. But
yeah. 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 We had it with the team. One of our guys on the team said, do you mind if we just hop on here and just like all talk about films and what, just basically talk about anything, just have a chat. Like we actually did it on Friday where we all just got on a call and just had a little, inevitably, hand on heart, we did end up talking about work for a bit of it. But it was nice because you do, it's like you can have these days where you just, we're all social beings, mate, aren't we? We need it.
We need that interaction.
Very much. I think anybody who wants to be a recruiter, it's if you're not outgoing, if you're not the extrovert, If you can't walk into a room and strike up a conversation with anybody that's sitting in that room, no matter who they are, no matter where they're from, no matter anything, if you can't strike up a conversation with somebody in a room full of 100 people, then you're probably not going to make it as a recruiter, because recruiters are some of the most social beings, because all we do is talk to people. It's either we're talking to hiring managers, we're talking to candidates, or we're talking to ourselves, just trying to tell ourselves that we're still sane and that, you know, those purple squirrels do exist.
Do you think you have to be a little bit crazy? I think you do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You have to have a good sense of humor. And I think you have to have a sense of adventure too, because sometimes you touch on personal subjects with candidates and you need to be able to understand different aspects of somebody else's life, even, but and just communicate with them on their level. So such a broad spectrum of a skill set, though, that's required for a recruiter to be successful in their field.
Yeah, I think it is. On the AI front, though, the way I look at the AI thing, first of all, it was job boards. It was like, we've got job boards now, we don't need recruiters. That's like, okay. Then it was LinkedIn. Right, everyone's got the information now, it's all out there. And okay, now it's AI. For me, it's just like another version of those two things. Heard it all before. Hopefully I'm not being complacent. I don't think I am. I think there's a lot of things where it can make us better. And I think any job that involves enhanced communication skills, I think, is foolproof. And I think it could really help. Really do. Mm-hmm.
The way I feel about AI is that I don't feel that AI is, it's one of those things where I know of certain companies that use AI to review resumes. And because of my belief that AI isn't foolproof, if a company is using AI to review a resume, the possibility exists that AI could see a candidate as not being a good fit for one reason or the other. But in reality, who's ever going to know if that was an exceptionally talented person that AI just kicked out of the pile because of whatever algorithm was active at that time? And I always wonder about that. And I advise people, if you're applying for a position and that button is there to exclude your resume from review by AI, you might think about selecting that and just to ensure. But then, do we really know if it's being scanned by AI or not, you know? So it's tough to get around a lot of those caveats.
Yeah, and I've seen it a lot where people, and I've said to people, like, why have you got all that on your resume? And they've put certain stuff on their resume because they've been told that they have to do it or they can't get past the first stage. And it's, some of these guys, I know them, I'm like, you don't even do it. And they're like, oh, it's okay. It's, I don't know, but like, everyone's got a different story and maybe different ATSs do different things these days. I don't know. I don't know if you've got any insights there, Stephen. I don't know. It's a bit of a different
system. Yeah, because
system.
AI is going to work similar to the way that you and I would, is when we look at a resume, it's going to search for certain keywords. And if those keywords don't exist, it's going to kick it out of a pile. But see, where I feel that AI goes wrong is they're looking for certain keywords and doesn't exist on the resume. We are using our own deductive reasoning to look at the statements that are on the resume. It's, if we're looking for a specific, say, CRM, and it doesn't present itself specifically on the resume, but then you look at the job and you look at other things on the resume and you figure out, okay, they've got to be using a CRM to some extent, right? But if AI didn't see a specific CRM noted, then AI might kick that resume out rather than progressing, and they run the risk of losing a potential exceptionally skilled and qualified individual because of an algorithm.
I've even had it before where big tech company down in California, I'd interviewed this pen tester. The internal team looked at his resume and said, we're not interviewing him. And I said, look, I've interviewed you. I can't promise he'll get an offer, but I can promise you as soon as a technical hiring manager sees him, he or she will want to interview him. They won't be annoyed they've interviewed him, like he's very good. So even in that scenario, even from the resume, even a human looking at that particular resume, you couldn't tell until you'd actually spoken to that individual. Yeah, and I do think on some of the harder to fill roles, maybe on some of the really, be interested to see what you think, on some of the lower end, more junior stuff, maybe AI can do, but I think the really senior kind of more intricate specialized roles that are hard to fill where candidates maybe are in lesser supply, I think it's very tricky.
Yeah, and we use a lot of automation and in our process currently, but it's tiered. So just like what you're talking about is at certain levels. So like at a manager position, they're going to follow a different process, what an entry level position is, and they're both going to follow a different process than what like director or C level is going to follow. And the higher up in the tiers you get, the more personal hands-on touches there are rather than or AI or technology getting involved in that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's one of those that we'd all be crazy to completely ignore it, but we'd also all be crazy to completely go full hog and overboard because it would just kill the service level that we can offer, wouldn't it?
And I think that it goes a long way that there's still even a lot of candidates that come through my process that are like, man, it seems like it's a lot of automation and it's a lot of like in impersonality. But at the end of the day, we have our processes built around efficiencies and not necessarily some of the other things that might be involved in that, because I am doing outbound recruiting. I'm doing my own searches, and sometimes I don't have all the time in the world to do pre-screen interviews. So we use a one-way video interview platform for some of our pre-screens, and a time saver for me. And it's a time saver for candidates to do stuff like that too, because it allows them to go through an initial pre-screen interview on their own schedule. They could do it in the middle of the night if they want to, when their kids are or what have you. They don't have to leave work. They don't have to come up with an excuse why they can't make a meeting. I think the one-way video interview platforms have been gracious, at least towards me.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, there's.
So people are generally cool with doing them.
And I have like touch points set up so that if I send out a request for the one-way video interview, if they haven't gotten to it in 2 days, I'll send them another email and just say, hey, just so you know, like this isn't a fully automated process. There's actually me, a human being behind sending you the telling the system to send you these emails.
I'm
And
real.
then above and beyond that, it is actually me in the videos asking the questions to the candidates in our one-way platform. And I try to make it fun. I came up with an intro video and an outro video. And like, I even make fun of myself in some of these videos to the candidates, which it helps them loosen up. And the feedback from that specific portion of the process that I've gotten from candidates has been overwhelmingly positive, where I've gotten so much positive feedback from that of candidates saying, look, the way that this platform worked and the way that you had structured the videos and you talking, it really made my comfort level go sky high to where I felt like I was just in an interview, and that's the way it was. But it's no different than a digital interview like this kind of a setting. So
Cool. So they go through the and then you review the do you watch the videos back and then you can
correct.
basically that okay, cool.
Yeah,
Okay.
except I'm not seeing some of the efficiency around that is I'm able to, so like I can speed the video up to 1.2 times just to help it go a little bit quicker, but I can still understand everything they're saying. And I'm a fast talker too. But then beyond that, I'm not having to spend my time asking the questions over and over and listening to myself ask those questions. Rather, I just have to listen to the total of 12 minutes worth of their video returns, and I already know what the questions are. So it does. It frees that has freed up an immense amount of my time to work on other duties and other responsibilities that I have.
You're getting me really excited. I like the sound of this. I can see that working. I think we're going to have to try this.
It is. And even for me, like it was scary at first when I got into it, because all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, I have to record all of these videos. This is just stupid. Like, I don't want to do this. And then my face is going to be out there and I'm nervous. And I'd rather just talk to somebody face to face. And then I sat and did take after take after take. And I even make mention in one of the videos about you have no idea how many takes all of this took to put together. And it's the truth. I'm talking for the course of 7 videos, I probably did well over 100 takes to get all of the videos perfect. Because it's like you'll get to that last, like, sail it home statement. And you F up on a word, you stumble over your words, and you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. And then you have to start all over again. It's not like you can just, shave it and replace just that section. You have to do the whole thing over again. And yeah, it turned out to be a lot of fun. And I was just dying laughing by the time I was done at myself, by the time I was done with all of this, because every time I'd mess up, of course, here comes the curse words. And I didn't get to the point where I threw things though.
Do you know what you should honestly do is, I think two things. You should leave one of those outtake videos in so all the candidates can see you mess up one. I think that would be really funny. I think they'd really like that.
Yeah, and there's even, I think there's still one video on there where I do stumble over my words, but I was able to catch it quick enough. And I just, because I'm like, you know what? I'm human too.
Exactly.
And I don't expect the candidates' videos in return to be 100% perfect. I just want them to answer the questions, and if they answer the questions and they're providing answers that I'm looking for, then at that point I could almost care less about anything else that's going on, as long as they're meeting the qualifications. And that's what I'm after, you know, is I want to know, can they do the job? Do they meet the qualifications? And if they can do the job and meet the qualifications, then why not? Because at the end of the day, everybody's human, and I'm not naive. I'm not going to sit here and think that someone's going to come in the door and be absolutely 100% perfect from day one. They're going to make mistakes when they come in the door. And that's part of learning and growing. That's part of our journey, is we get to learn and grow from our own mistakes and others' mistakes, and then feedback and criticisms. And as long as you take it as a learning and growing experience, you'll be on a good path.
Yeah, no, cool. I really like that. Is there anything else you're doing on the automation side that you've really found to be really successful?
I use project management software, Asana. And Asana is well known. So I use Asana to track my candidate pipeline. I'm out from there and then create automations within Asana to be able to do certain things when you change a stage in a candidate. And then even with our ATS is set up the same way, where it is actually me that's physically changing the stage of a candidate within our ATS. And then at the stage, maybe a certain task comes to me, or maybe an email goes to the candidate, or an email might go out to HR, just depending on whatever the stage is, alerting someone that something is changing or something needs to be done. And then the tasks that are coming to myself, those are set in place as a backup plan. So it end up getting really sick and I'm out for a week, that doesn't mean that recruiting can just stop because we're an actively hiring company. So somebody else needs to be able to slip into my seat and read through the process I developed and follow that step by step. The rest of everything else is going to do half of the work for them off of the automations. When they move a candidate to this step, it's going to assign them a task because they're the ones that moved them into the step. And then that task is more for them than it is for me, who does it every day, built into the automation, so that anybody, in essence, anybody in our company could slip into my seat and pick up recruiting if needed, if there was a high priority role, or even if it was to post a job because I was on vacation for 2 weeks, something along those lines. But yeah, automation's been built into our ATS. We have automation built into Asana just for the recruiting pipeline. And then we have some other automations that are built into some of the other platforms that we use, like our one-way video interview platform. So automation is a lot of what we've done, more so than utilizing AI. We use AI for, going back to prompt generators, it's like we use AI for sometimes to help us with verbiage in a job posting, a marketing post. Or like when I repost things on LinkedIn, sometimes I'm asking a chat prompter to produce something for me just to put into my feed to job or things like that. But yeah, AI isn't a huge portion of our process. It's more the automation, just out of efficiencies.
Yeah, no, cool, mate. I think that video thing's the thing that really caught my attention. I like that. I'm definitely going to try it. Definitely.
It's a riot once you get into it and you start figuring your way around it and you start learning about it and how it works. And then, like I said, the feedback that I've ended up getting from the candidates has just been ridiculously positive, and I've enjoyed every bit of feedback and hearing what people have to say. But now at this point, I swear by them. I love the one-way video interview platforms. Mm. They're great for both experiences on both sides of the table.
Mm. Well, yeah, I like what you said as well, is it's saving them time as well. So it's mutually beneficial.
It really is.
Yeah, it's good. It's cool. Wicked. You mentioned before about when people are filling out different applications, you can tell when it's been written and done in AI because you get used to the patterns. Does that throw people out of your, does that put you off, or is that like a bit of a no? Does that kind of mark people down? I'm just interested. There'll be a lot of the listeners wanting to hear from someone like you that's doing a lot of hiring in the space. Is that something where you think, oh God, does it mark them down, is what I'm essentially asking.
this might blow a lot of people away. For me personally, when I see that on an application, they're utilizing resources. They're using tools. They're using technology. But they're using all of those tools, those resources, those technologies that even I use. Okay. And even that comes down from our leadership. It's if we can utilize AI to help us be a little bit more efficient or to save a few minutes here or to help us get a message out in a manner that we're looking for, because sometimes you know what you want to say, you just need to soften the tone and you can't for it. Where these prompters come into play. So when I see that on an application or a resume, it's not a turnoff for me. In fact, it might make me pay a little bit more attention to what's between the lines than what just lies on the surface. And then I might dig a little bit deeper, but then I'm also looking then deeper into their resume and their experiences, and I'm paying a little bit more attention to things than I might otherwise, just because I need to be able to see through those lines. But no, the way I look at it, they found a resource and they're using that resource and they're using it effectively. And if they're doing what I do on almost a daily basis, then why would I want to fault them for it? And that's me personally, though, in my role and even just within my org. It's like AI has become a big portion. And even back in my agency life, when I was with a recruiting agency, it was the same way. We used the chat prompters, postings on LinkedIn and things like that. It wasn't always a turnoff, more so as they're using the tools that they have available to them to help better their own life. And I can't fault someone for that.
Cool. No, it's interesting to hear you say that. Yeah, because you're right, because I hear what you said, that's you personally, because everyone will be different. But I'm sure there'll be plenty of people in the same camp as you, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of people that are the other way. But yeah, it's interesting to hear it from your side. I had a candidate who got thrown out of an application process because they'd basically checked it and they'd realized they'd done it with AI and it kicked him out. But it was like, you know, he never got told not to. It's one of them. It's just differences of opinion.
And know that these things exist where companies are using AI to review resumes and review applications. It's, see, to me, then it's, if you're going to use it to review my resume and review my application, then why would I not be able to use the same technology then to apply for the job? And if as long as it's truth, as long as the truth is what's there, that's what matters. And you can always tell then just by getting somebody on the phone and asking them a few technical questions, whether or not they know what they're talking about. And then you know, okay, either yes, at this point, I do need to pass on this candidate, or no, I need to keep them in my pipeline because I asked them the questions and they were able to answer those questions effectively.
Yeah. Do you know what? You've hit the nail on the head there. If your intentions are good and it's the truth, I'm like that. It's like when we're outreaching for new business or whatever it is, the service you're providing is good. You're reaching out for all the right reasons. That's okay. If you're reaching out for anything else, that's when it becomes a problem. And it's the same with what you said. If it's an application, if you're being real, if you're being honest, if you're genuinely looking to add value to that organization, then yeah. It's cool, you know?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. So you're doing a lot of hiring at the minute. Is there any kind of any things that guys and girls out there are doing that are helping them in the process, or any things that are hindering them, or any do's and don'ts in that hiring process that could help people?
Oh, man. Let's hang on. How much time do we have here? The biggest problem that I see with candidates that are actively applying, first and foremost, make sure your resume is updated. When I open up an application and I'm looking at a resume and the last experience that's noted on your resume says that you ended that position 2.5 years ago, but then there's no education in the interim, there's nothing else on the resume that kind of fills in that blank of what have you been doing for the last 2 years then? You know, if that's what you were doing, what are you doing now? Even just writing, and I've seen this on resumes, even just writing a little statement that says, hey, you know, I had to leave my job to do end-of-life care for an ailing grandparent or something along those lines. And again, I've seen that on resumes. That helps fill in the blank. And then at that point, I'm like, oh, okay, that solves that problem. So that would be the first thing, is make sure your resume is up to date with your most recent job experience. And if you have large gaps in your experience, and by large gaps, I'd say if you were out of work for more than 3 months and that's reflected on your resume, fill in that blank somewhere for us of just, you took a sabbatical so I could focus on personal life or reground myself. Or I went and did a road trip across the US or Africa or wherever. I went to a safari, and because some of that stuff is actually interesting. I find that interesting. And that shows me that you're adventurous and that you do have a life outside of work, and you're not living to work, you're working to live. So first and foremost, that. Then beyond that, make sure your resume has your contact information on it. And at a bare minimum, should be an email address and a phone number, and a valid phone number at that. I can't tell you how many times I go to reach out to a candidate and it tells me that it's like the phone number is not working or something like that. And then above and beyond that, make sure that you're listening to your voicemail, and make sure that your voicemail isn't full. Because that's the worst thing, is like you call up a phone and there's either no voicemail ever set up, or the voicemail is full, or some other issue with the voicemail. Stay on top of that. And again, this is for people that are actively seeking out new employment. This is just going to help them. Beyond all of that, the next biggest thing that I run into is emails going into a spam or a junk folder. And if you're an active candidate on the job market, you should be keeping an eye, a daily check of your spam and your junk folders in your email account, because it is saying that's a junk email, even though it might be an interview request. And I've had these emails go into junk and spam folders. And if you get an email back from an application saying, hey, we want to take a look at your talents, can you complete this assessment for us just so that we know where you sit in things? Not all assessments are bad, and not all assessments are a pass-fail. We use assessments currently. They're not a pass-fail. We genuinely use them to structure onboarding processes around incumbents that might be coming in the door so that we can focus on where they might need a little extra help, certain things like that. So don't pass off those assessments as just, I don't need to do them. They'll tell you if they're optional or not. But like, our assessments are required. If you want to come on board with us, we require you to take these assessments so that we know where you stand in the thick of things. And then if you don't get an answer that you appreciate, so obviously there's people out there that don't appreciate rejection. Replying to that email and saying, I've got 35 years of this experience and I can do better without you, and this was just a waste of my time. It's just, take a step back and think about your reaction before you fire off an email like that, because that can blacklist you. And I've even had people send me those emails to a rejection and then apply for another role like a month later. And it's, I know you sent me that email because it's in our ATS. So those would be the major things that I see that maybe they're not doing wrong, but maybe they just didn't know. Maybe nobody's ever thought, hey, I'm applying for these jobs, I should be keeping an eye on my junk and my spam folder. Because the emails that we send out of our ATS, they come from that automated string of characters and whatever. And so, yeah, there's a lot of times where AI would see that as being a spam email and throw it into a different folder rather than your inbox. So those would be my key recommendations to any active candidate on the job market, is just keep track of your stuff, follow up with everything. When you get the automated reply emails, open them, look at them, make sure that they're not asking you for additional information, because that could affect your candidacy if you really want the job. And then, you know, not everybody looks for cover letters either. So cover letters to me are neither here nor there. I don't read them. I don't ask for them. You know, supply a cover letter if, I always say supply a cover letter if they're asking for it. And if they're not, then chances are they probably don't care.
Cool. Stephen, that was a phenomenal answer, man. That's just packed full of mega, mega information. And there's so much there that if you weren't doing any of that, you would be having a really tough time out there. Really tough time. Even if you were pretty good, you'd be having a tough time. So it's some mega stuff there. Just on the gaps in the resume, like the amount of times where, or even like a jumpy, for people not in recruitment, jumpy means when you've moved employers a lot of times. But for a jumpy resume, that's the amount of times I've looked at one, and you realize that one of the postings they had was a contract gig, so that's cool. Then you realize that the company got acquired twice, so even though there's three different logos on the resume, it's all the same company. And you're looking at a resume going, God, this girl's moved five times in 5 years. And then you find out she's literally had two jobs in 5 years, and you're like, wow. And none of it's explained on the resume or the LinkedIn profile. For a fact, it's probably stopping that person from even getting their foot in the door, you know?
Yeah, and I look at that, I call them job hoppers. So I look at that in the terms of if it's a sales position and I see the salesperson like every year they're changing organizations, that to me would be a red flag. But again, digging deeper, you're right. And I've been my own enemy in that, in those circumstances sometimes where I'm looking at a resume and I'm like, dear God, look at all these jobs. But then a nice backup to a resume is a LinkedIn profile. And almost anybody who's applying for a job is going to have some kind of a LinkedIn profile these days, and especially if it's a techie job or cybersecurity or sales. And then go to their LinkedIn because sometimes their LinkedIn will actually show you that line of acquired by, or they can enter additional information because some people find LinkedIn easier to update than, say, your own resume. And they'll keep LinkedIn updated, but their resume may fall behind a little bit or they may miss something. But then that goes back to one thing that I suggest to people is always make sure that if you do have a LinkedIn profile and it's a built-out LinkedIn profile, make sure that your LinkedIn profile and your resume mirror each other. I should see the same exact information on your LinkedIn profile that I see on your resume.
Yeah, no, cool. No, definitely. Yeah, I've had it before where I've the same, mate. I've literally thought someone looked like they've been here, there, and everywhere, and they just hadn't. And I say, if I hadn't have checked or I hadn't have asked you, you'd have never known. That emotional email one is an interesting one as well, where people get annoyed. I've had it even worse, even where there was one in the end, I actually had to block this guy on LinkedIn because every post I did, he was obviously just so annoyed that he wasn't getting an interview anywhere. And he would comment on every post I did. Then if one of my clients who was a founder commented on my post, he would then look at their company and start bad-mouthing their company. And in the end, I just blocked him because I was like, you never, he was trying to break into security. He was a junior. I thought if every person that comments on my post, you start slagging off their company, you never ever. So in the end, I blocked him for his own benefit. But it was like, that's one step worse where people, it's one thing doing it on an email, but if you start doing it on social, it's out there forever. And to your point, LinkedIn is part of your resume these days. Like obviously me and you are going straight on the LinkedIn profile to see what's been going on. Sometimes I go and scroll back through comments and see what sort of person they are and check them out. And I'm sure you check these things out as well. And once it's out there, it's out there.
Yeah, as recruiters, we are private investigator work because we have to be private investigators. And just like you said, is making sure that you're reading the resume. And I've been guilty of looking at a resume and just thinking, oh my God, like this person just jumped around, and then missing the fact that the companies were connected and one was purchased by the other. And you don't know until you speak to a candidate about it to find out, like, why did you? And I'll flat out ask them if I'm genuinely interested in a candidate based off of their skill set and their experience and forgoing anything about being a job hopper, I'll call them absolutely. And I'll be like, hey, can you give me some reasoning behind this? Because if I were to move forward with you and present you to a hiring manager, that question is going to get asked to me. And I want to be able to have an answer because if I have that answer for you right when the hiring manager asks that, we're golden. I just need to be able to know what the story is. And if I can explain that, then we're going to get you through the process. Like job hopping, that's something that AI would shuffle a resume out of the pile for.
It
And I
would.
know that exists as well.
Yeah, it would. And no, that's definitely the best way to do it and best practice. Because the other thing I think is, especially if it's a technical role, like when that guy or girl gets on with the technical hiring manager, they want to geek out and talk about hacking or cloud security or whatever it might be. They don't want to talk about career moves. Like that's, and if we've listed it all first, then none of that needs to come up in conversation and they can just get down to business and have a better interview as well. So yeah, I think it's good. Do you know what? I'm glad we've moved on to the active jobs, because I think there's, like, when I see people out there that applied for 500 jobs or 1,000 jobs and got nowhere, when I see stats like that, I'm like, have you really though, or have you just clicked easy apply or clicked copy and paste or just sent a generic resume everywhere? I do think that if you combine everything you've said with a more of a hyper personalized approach or a tailored approach or following up with a personalized message on LinkedIn, I think if you're doing that, I don't think you can apply for 500 jobs and not get an answer or not get an interview. I think it's when people are spraying and praying too much or just not actually just, it's almost like slow down to speed up.
Yeah, and that's a great point too that you're making is for candidates that are on an active job market and are seeking new employment or just some employment in general, figure out what it is you want to do. And more importantly, figure out what it is you don't want to do.
Mm.
And don't apply just to random jobs because you need a job. And you're right. Just throwing your resume out there to into walls and seeing which ones stick, that's just not really a good process to follow. More so just focus on the ones that you want, or focus on the company that you want to go to work for. But say that you want to go to work for a company as a recruiter. Don't apply to like their operations manager position, or don't apply to a sales position because you're hoping to get in the door and get on as a recruiter. Because if you apply to a sales position and get in there as sales, it's going to be really hard to get you into that recruiter seat. There's not really a career path internally in organizations for that, but it doesn't mean that it hasn't been done or it can't be done. It's just more focused on what it is that you want out of a new job. Is it better pay? Is it a different company or a different location or a different position or a promotion? And then focus on that. And if you really like a company and you really want to go to work there, focus on what skill sets are going to get you in the door for that position that you want with that company. And then reach out to your network. Start forming connections with people that work in that company or in those specific roles, for even competitive companies to the one you want to work for. Use their competitors to your advantage. So for me, yeah, it's a lot about just focus and understanding yourself and understanding what you need for yourself to feel successful. And when I have people that apply for my positions here, I look and our ATS tells us, hey, it's a duplicate profile. Look at all the other jobs. And there was one guy the other day that applied for a role, and I opened it up and it says it's 14 possible duplicates. And I look at that and he's applied for almost every single position we've opened over the last year, regardless of what it was. And it's, I understand the guy really wants to come to work for us, but you're going about it the wrong way. And that's someone that I reached out to and just said, look, like I see this in our system. What is it you're actually going, you know? And then I gave him some pointers on his resume. I gave him some pointers on things he could do moving forward from here. And I told him, I go, look, it's not about just applying for a role to get yourself in the door. It's about applying for the role that you want. And if it's not available right now, open those doors that I'm a recruiter for this company. Reach out to me on LinkedIn and say, hey, I'm a pen tester and I really want to come to work for your organization. How can I best position myself for that role when it opens? And what's like with me, now all of a sudden that guy's, he's stuck in the back of my mind. Ping him on LinkedIn and say, hey, we just launched this role. Here's the link to it.
Mm.
And I'm going to see. And if he's not available at that point in time because he already found something else, then so be it. And that's okay. Mm. But at the same point, sometimes recruiters can offer you advice that comes across as criticism. And again, it's learning and growing. And it's not that we're trying to criticize candidates negatively. It's more so that we're just trying to tell them how it is and help them get to their end goal and reach their end game.
Yeah, no, definitely, Stephen. And LinkedIn is such a powerful tool, isn't it? It's just phenomenal. You talk about making connections on there. I've got people on there that I've never even met in real life, but they are literally like friends. They're almost like pals, and you ping a little video or a voice note, and you get a real connection with people on there. And it's got that, you probably remember it from years ago. I saw a screenshot of LinkedIn years ago, and it was literally a job board almost, wasn't it, when it started? But it's like it's changed a bit now. But yeah, it's like a full-blown social media platform now. It's phenomenal. If you've got a good presence on there, if you're trying to win new business, if you're trying to build relationships, if you're trying to get a job, if you're trying to get established in a certain space, it's good. It's a really good tool.
Yes, absolutely. And the same goes with the mini investigator thing and since you're bringing up LinkedIn in such a way, it's like for candidates, use caution with what you're posting on LinkedIn too, because I've looked at resumes in the past and thought, oh my God, like this is my golden child right here. I've got him. and then I talk to him and I'm like, man, here, this experience, and I've got this question, and they're just on the ball all the way through it. And then after everything, I'm like, okay, so then I start putting everything together and I go and I start looking at their LinkedIn profile, and then I start to see what they've posted recently. And sometimes that will play an effect in things. You don't want somebody that's hugely controversial coming through the door, because you just, it's that wild card. Then you don't know what you're going to get in a professional setting. And I've even come across that in interviews. Trust me, I did an interview one time where this girl started talking about how she strapped a goat to the rafters and butchered it, and how she did that exactly. Oh yeah. So yeah, you got to be careful what you're doing, because things get taken into account in your professional life that you may not think otherwise. And there's things that are appropriate and there's things that aren't. And so just use caution, and do some due diligence with your postings on LinkedIn and links. So it should be kept professional.
Yeah, it should. And just keep in mind that you're being continually assessed through that hiring process. Even to bring that up in an interview, if you've, it's probably good that she did, because at least you found out she was a bit crazy. But from her perspective, why would you bring that up?
The question that was posed of her was, tell me about a skill that you had to teach yourself or learn yourself without any outside influence. And so that was how she described the skill that she learned. And it was a rather gruesome story, but at the end of it, see, even like right now, like we're laughing about it, but at the time I was so appalled. I'm like, I cannot believe that this is a conversation we're having right now.
God, I bet. I bet the interview finished pretty quickly. I don't know. It would have
been. Yeah. And I've been in interviews that, I mean, I've seen hiring managers drop interviews a hat, and based on things that were said or a comment that was made. There was one guy that really stands out in my mind, that he showed up to a hiring manager interview in his Nike gym shirt, and there was a pizza stain or something, some kind of red sauce stain on the shirt. And right after the hiring manager got in, I could see the look on his face, and I'm just like, I don't even know. This guy was coached and the whole nine yards, I don't know. And the hiring manager made his intro, and the guy like grabbed a 2 liter of Coke, and the hiring manager just said, you know what, I think we've had enough, and clearly this is not the right time for the interview, so I'm going to go ahead and exit, and good luck in your job search. And that was it. You know?
I did it.
Happen.
Yeah, Steve, bearing in mind most of what we're doing, and I'd be interested to hear what type of level that particular individual was at. Even if some of the most senior roles I'm working on, some of the stuff, I did a post about it. I was like, don't wear baseball caps. Don't do this. Don't turn up with like massive logos. And some people are like, just don't do it. Like, just put like a plain white or a black t-shirt with a collar on, and just like a nice, but just what some people do is just, it's just crazy.
I have a standard spiel. Even as a corporate recruiter, I coach my candidates before they get into a hiring manager interview. And it's not like I'm telling them what to say, more so as I'm just, and I form it as, this is just advice. And anything I'm telling you right now, it is from personal experiences of things that I have seen happen in an interview and know personally happened in an interview. Male or female, it doesn't matter. Just put something on with buttons. You don't have to go all out and have a tie or a handkerchief or anything like that. But anything with buttons goes, and we're good with that. As long as it doesn't have your Nike emblem and your pizza stain on it. There's a small spiel that I give to candidates to help them get prepped for an interview, because then that's part of being a recruiter, is if you're actively trying to recruit a candidate and present them for a position, if you, even as a corporate recruiter, if you're not preparing those candidates for the interview properly, and they just bomb out in that initial interview because of something that could have been mitigated prior to that reflects back on the recruiter and what they're doing in their day-to-day jobs. I always prep candidates as best I can for the interviews, and without giving anything away, and it's possible to do it.
Cool. It's just such a shame when people, like when someone's good and they just do something crazy, like rock up in a baseball cap, and you actually know they were pretty good as well. And it's why you could have actually been added loads of value to the organization, and you could have helped yourself, and you've gone and worn a cap. Like, what the? Anyway, but yeah, I tell you what, Stephen, you're easy to talk to, mate, because for everyone listening, like, I was trying to find the questions that I'd wrote out, and I couldn't find them, so I just gave up, didn't I? And I was like, just freestyle it. And it's been such a nice, like, we've gone well over the hour. I've really enjoyed it, mate. It's been nice. been good.
I think maybe next time we meet, we can just do a story and tell session, and we can just go over like the most horrible experiences that we've had, and then we can end it on the most positive experiences that we've had. Always like to finish on a lighter note, right?
I just wanted to do, I want to do one with all the stories from all the people you used to manage and all the recruit. Like, it sounds like goat one. I don't know if you can top that one. That's up. That's got to be up there. But yeah, cool. But no, thank you, my friend. I know you're a busy man, so I appreciate your time, and thanks again for coming on. It flew, and it was good, and it was very informative, and it will really help the listeners. Thanks, mate.
It's been a true and absolute pleasure to be here, Thomas. Absolutely, and I'm grateful for the invite, and I'm grateful for the conversation. So thank you so very much for inviting me here today.
Cool. Thank you, mate. See you soon, buddy.